Welcome to Primary Viewpoints from Patient Care Online, a monthly podcast that features informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about what impacts primary care medicine today. I'm your host, Sydney Jennings, Associate Editor with Patient Care Online. In this episode, I speak with obesity specialist Sandra Christensen about the negative impact weight bias can have on patients with obesity, how it is more prevalent in healthcare than one might think, and what led her to write her new book, A Clinician's Guide to Discussing Obesity with Patients, which was published in April 2021 by Springer. Ms. Christensen is a board-certified nurse practitioner and has specialized in obesity treatment since 2005. She owns Integrative Medical Weight Management in Seattle, Washington, where she provides personalized, comprehensive obesity treatment. She also holds the Certificate of Advanced Education in Obesity Medicine from the Obesity Medicine Association. Ms. Christensen speaks on the topic of obesity at national, state, and local conferences and webinars, and is involved in projects and initiatives that educate clinicians about obesity treatment and advocate for access to care. She serves as a trustee on the OMA Board of Trustees and is a contributing author of the OMA Obesity Algorithm. Ms. Christensen has dedicated herself to educating others about the complexities of obesity. Through clinical practice, speaking, writing, mentoring, and advocacy, she empowers clinicians to address obesity with knowledge and compassion. Thank you for joining me today, Ms. Christensen.
Thanks so much for having me, Sydney. I'm really excited to talk to you today. Well, I started specializing in the treatment of obesity 16 years ago, and I applied for and was given a position in a weight management clinic and was mentored from the very beginning to see obesity as a complex health condition, as a disease, not as a moral failing and not as a lifestyle choice or lack of willpower. So I was very fortunate from the beginning to receive that framework. And I was pretty excited about all the things that I could do to help my patients and all the ways that their health improved. And that continues to this day. I really, really love treating obesity. But some interesting things that started to arise as I was treating folks is I started to hear stories from them about biased interactions that they were having with their other healthcare providers. So they would, here's an example, they would work with me, lose 40 pounds, get off of medications, go see their primary care, who would just look at their weight and say, you know, you need to lose some weight, and just didn't acknowledge, you know, that the patient had already lost weight, that their health had improved off of medications. And I would hear this over and over again. And the other thing that was really surprising to me was someone would come in, they had injured their knee and it really needed to be looked at and they weren't able to move well or exercise. And so I would say, I would like you to go in and see your primary care or your ortho provider and get an evaluation. And they would kind of look at me and say, okay, yeah, I'll do that. And then I would see them again in a week or two and still hadn't gotten an evaluation. And so I would start to ask deeper questions, you know, is there something that's stopping you from doing that? And they would tell me that they were afraid that they were going to get lectured about their weight and that they would be told that that issue or whatever else it was because of their weight. And they didn't want to deal with it. So they wouldn't go in. And I realized that I might have this fantastic knowledge that obesity is a chronic health issue and how we treat it and what our treatment goals are, but that lots of other clinicians didn't, that there was, you know, there's a powerful bias against people who carry extra weight, those with higher body weights in society. And I started to realize in healthcare as well. And I started to research it and learn that it's very, very prevalent and that it prevents patients from seeking healthcare, for even providers from ordering tests and evaluations. And so in the end, weight bias isn't just this hurtful, painful thing for people. It really has a negative impact on both their physical and psychological health.
what are some of the specific health consequences of weight bias?
So we see higher rates of depression. We see higher rates of disordered eating or eating disorders, binge eating in particular, when people have internalized the bias that they receive in all walks of life, because people experience weight bias in the workplace, they experience it in society, with their families, and in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And people don't go in, women don't go in for their annual exams. And so they're not being screened for breast cancer, endometrial cancer, colon cancer. And so we see higher rates of cancer because they haven't been detected. I can tell you one example of a patient fairly recently who's very well educated. She was really tired and short of breath. And I encouraged her to seek care from her primary care. And it took her a long time to get in because she was afraid of experiencing bias from her provider. Mm-hmm. And then she was told she had asthma. And kind of a long story short, she had very severe heart failure. And so she has had to quit her job as an attorney. She has had to put all of her energy into, you know, trying to improve her heart condition, which she has been fairly successful, but she still has, you know, fairly low heart function at this point. Mm-hmm. So at the age of 61 with new grandchildren, she doesn't know how long she'll live. And to me, that's tragic. And that's one example of how the bias keeps people from going in. Healthcare providers tend to spend less time with people that have obesity and order less testing and evaluation. So that's another way that negatively affects health.
You mentioned how you noticed a lot of physicians didn't really realize how much or how prevalent weight bias was in healthcare. Is that what led you to writing your book, A Clinician's Guide to Discussing Obesity with Patients?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because what I realized is that people get into healthcare because they want to help people and that this isn't some, you know, plot. They're not people who want to hurt others. They just don't know. They have a lack of understanding, first of all, that obesity is a disease. And second of all, how it might manifest in society, and in particular in healthcare, and they might not be aware of their own implicit bias. They may are likely aware of their explicit bias, but without an understanding of both those parts of, you know, weight bias, that obesity is a disease rather than a personal choice that someone made, and then that weight bias is prevalent in society and healthcare. And so I wanted to write a book that educated them about that, about obesity, about weight bias, about how it hurts, and then some strategies to reduce it, and then speak to the barriers that they have in their settings, because there's plenty, right? Especially in primary care, people have 12 minutes with somebody. And so how are they ever going to address this really complex health issue with people?
For primary care physicians who want to create a better environment for their patients with obesity, what strategies do you provide in your book specifically to help physicians?
Good question. So education about obesity, education about weight bias, some very validated tools that they can use to identify their own bias and understand it better with compassion for themselves, not in a way that creates shame or guilt, but just helps them recognize that they're part of the society that we all live in. Mm-hmm. And then helping them understand the importance of the setting of their healthcare setting, meaning that many patients go into waiting rooms where the chairs aren't large enough for them. There isn't equipment in the exam rooms that's adequate for them. So I educate them on how to create a physical environment that's welcoming and non-shaming and is not stigmatizing. Mm. How to teach their staff how to talk to people. One of the most important things that we know is that the way we refer to people with health conditions makes a big difference. And so I recommend people first language, which puts the person before the disease. So you say a person with obesity or a person affected by obesity, rather than using terms like obese or morbidly obese, because mm-hmm. those are very uncomfortable words for people with obesity. Mm-hmm. And then I give them some strategies on how to bring it up in a very short period of time.
What's your top strategy that would be easy for physicians to just start with?
Yes. So the most important question to start with, which is different than the way we approach other conditions, is to ask permission. So to say, do I have your permission to discuss your weight? Or would it be all right if we discuss your weight? Now, we don't ask that to talk about a knee or diabetes or asthma or anything else. But because people have experienced so much stigma and so many biased interactions, you're really showing them respect and dignity. Mm-hmm. And that act alone can go a long way in building that relationship, because that person is likely to trust the clinician when it started with that. And if the person says no, then that has to be respected, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they can't bring it up next time, right? To ask again. I think it's really likely that with time, that person would agree to the conversation. And then once that's granted, to link the issues that the patient is experiencing with their weight and to let them know that they have an understanding of obesity, you know, to say obesity is a chronic health condition. You know, it's not a lifestyle choice. It's not a character flaw or moral failing, to really ground the conversation in the science and to show them, I understand this. And then to link it to whatever issue they've come in with. You know, I think that if we addressed your obesity, that would improve your diabetes, or that might improve your blood pressure or bring your lipids down or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then to move into, would you be interested in talking about treatment? That might be all there's time for in primary care. And so if the person is interested, then they can bring them back for another appointment to either discuss a referral or to address it themselves if they're educated on how to treat obesity. And there's so many different ways that it can be approached in primary care, but just to have started the conversation and schedule follow-up is valuable. And I think you could do that in about 3 minutes.
You mentioned barriers. Could you speak a little bit about what these barriers are and how they make it more challenging for physicians and perhaps patients?
Yes, yes. Well, we already talked about one of the biggest barriers, which is weight bias. Mm-hmm. And then we talked about time. And that's probably one of the biggest barriers, as we discussed, because they have so much to address, so little time. Mm-hmm. Reimbursement is another issue, because insurers don't always provide coverage for obesity treatment. And if a visit is coded such that, you know, that was the main reason for the visit, then it may not be covered. And that's a really big problem that we have in our society. And it's related to weight bias, because we don't see it as a legitimate health issue yet in this country. And so insurers don't cover it. So that's one of the barriers as well. Often they, as I said, don't have education on obesity, and they don't know about effective treatments. So becoming educated is a really important component of reducing those barriers. Developing a referral network, so knowing where to go to find specialists that do both surgical and non-surgical obesity treatment. And I provide all those resources in my book. So they can go to various websites and find clinicians who specialize in obesity treatment so that they can refer their patients.
You mentioned people first language, and I think that's really important. Could you speak a little bit more about that and highlight why it is so important in helping reduce weight bias in healthcare?
Yes, this is a topic I'm very passionate about. Mm-hmm. So people first language puts the person before the disease or the condition. And this is something that we use for diabetes, for autism, lots of mental health issues. We say the person with depression or affected by depression or with autism, or, you know, we don't say autistic or depressed. And so I think given the stigma that people with obesity experience, it's super important to put them before this disease. And there's lots of data on how painful it is to be told you're obese or morbidly obese. And the analogy I use is if someone has cancer, we say the person with cancer, right? The person has cancer. We don't call them a cancerous person. And we certainly don't say that they're morbidly cancerous, right? That when we all get how offensive that would be. And yes, so morbidly obese is just the equivalent of that.
You mentioned training staff, and that's another interesting point. How can primary care physicians train their own staff to reduce their own biases and recognize their own biases and correct them?
Yeah, so they can provide education to the staff. That's probably the important first step about, you know, obesity is a health condition. It's not a lifestyle choice. You know, teach them people first language. We need to treat people with respect. And we really need to understand that if we don't, they're not going to come in and their health is going to get worse. Mm-hmm. We need to teach them to gather the appropriate equipment prior to bringing a patient back into the clinical area. For example, they need to have the correct size of blood pressure cuffs. That's a real problem that people go in and the cuff's too small and they'll say, oh, this cuff's too small for you. I have to go get the large one, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to teach them to gather that all in advance. And if for whatever reason the cuff isn't large enough, to word it differently, to say, I got the wrong cuff, I'll be right back, and not like do anything that could feel shaming or critical of the patient. Scales should be in private areas, and they need to be adequate to weigh the patient, even up to 500-600 pounds, even though that's not super common. It's really important to have a scale. It needs to be in a private area. The person weighing should just have the person on the scale. There should be handrails or something mm-hmm. on the sides of the scale so that they can grab onto them if they need to, because a lot of people with obesity have mobility issues. So you want to make that comfortable and safe for them. And then no comment needs to be made about the weight. Mm-hmm. You know, you can ask the patient, would you like to know what your weight is? If they don't, they can turn around the other way on the scale. But they just need to write it down in the chart without comment, because that's a really common source of shame for people when they go in. Clinics need to have the long needles for drawing blood. When they do pelvic exams, they need the large speculum for that. And that, again, needs to be assembled in advance. There can be problems with the exam tables tipping because they're not properly secured, or they are afraid to get up on it. Being given a little paper gown that doesn't cover them all the way, you know, you need to make sure you have large gowns. Even urine collection can be an issue. So you need to have floor-mounted toilets with split seats and sometimes a handle for the urine specimen cup. All those little details really matter. And something I want to add to this topic is we talk about people with obesity as maybe being this small subset, or it sounds like some small subset of the population, but almost 43% of US adults have obesity and another 33% have pre-obesity. And so over 75% of US adults are in unhealthy weight. So this is the majority of our population, you know, and 20% of children have obesity. That's a lot of people. And we really have to do something about this, because if that many people aren't getting quality healthcare, aren't getting issues addressed, which obesity increases their risk of other things, what are we going to do as a society, you know, when our people get sicker and sicker? And so that's the thing that gets me out of bed every morning is that. The other thing I want to add is, the book is certainly for clinicians, but it's also for educators, because if we could get this education into medical schools, nurse practitioner schools, physician assistant schools, nursing schools, dietitian schools, you know, psychology schools, you know, all these other places, then we could train clinicians from the very beginning to know how to address this, which is probably the most common chronic issue they're going to see in their practices.
That leads me to one of my last questions, which is, moving forward, what do you think needs to be done first?
Two things. One is education, as you just mentioned, educating currently practicing clinicians, educating resident clinicians, educating students, right? Mm-hmm. And having it be part of the curriculum. Part of educating practicing clinicians is having more clinical education offerings, which I see more and more of in, you know, large organizations, but it needs to happen on all levels, local, state, regional, national. And the other thing is, we need insurance coverage. We need coverage for treatment of obesity, including the anti-obesity medications that are FDA approved. And we have just gotten word last week of another anti-obesity medication being FDA approved. And my experience is most people don't have coverage for those medications. So here's this excellent, valuable, evidence-based treatment that I can't utilize for my patients. And so we have a bill that's in front of Congress, I think, for the been out for about 6 years, which is the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act. And that, if it's passed, would require Medicare to pay for appointments that treat obesity, as well as the anti-obesity medications. And typically, when we see Medicare cover something, the other insurers follow suit. So that's a really big place that we could make a big difference.